You're listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast. Tonight, Josh, we're talking about the family.
Okay.
And addiction.
And regarding what about the family?
The family system, treating addiction, getting people into recovery, and then helping the family. You know, the addict, the person suffering from substance abuse issues has had this self-medication going on, so they've been able to buffer their way through their addiction. Meanwhile, the family's been on high alert the whole time.
Sure, sure.
And there's all these factors that keep people out of recovery, out of treatment for a long time. So family systems are very important to look at and to treat when we go into addiction.
Okay.
And when we go into treatment. So tonight we have several guests joining us. We have Jim and Ann, two parents of a recovering person, are in our studio. They have great experience going through this whole thing. And then we on the line we have our very good friend Diana Clark. Diana is a specialist in addiction and family systems. She offers an array of services designed to educate family members about addictive disorders and how to encourage healthy responses. She holds a master's degree in counseling psychology from Antioch University and runs her own consulting firm called Family Healing Strategies. Diana is also the author of Addiction Recovery, A Family's Journey. Came out in 2013. I want to give it to every family that's dealing with addiction of a loved one. But let's first introduce Ann and Jim. Like I said, they're parents. They've been through this. Welcome to Right Turn Radio.
Hi, Ann and Jim.
Ann and Jim.
Hi, John.
Hi, John and Josh. Thanks.
Hi, Josh.
Nice having you guys here. And Diana, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Hi, Ann and Jim. Nice to hear your voices again.
Hi, Diana.
Hi, Diana.
So, you know, we're talking about the family and why it's important to include families in this process, but also the way the family systems grow, and they can often become an entity of their own that help keep people sick.
Absolutely.
So I was wondering, Jim and Ann, can you give us a little background of how you became the parents of a recovering addict and what your experience was like leading up to your son going into treatment?
Well, clearly with our son, we realized that there was something different. His behavior had changed. His friends had changed. We weren't seeing the same young man that we had previously seen. The farthest thing from our mind, however, was drug addiction. We couldn't believe that our perfect young son, who was now older, of course, would have anything to do with drugs.
Jim, what did you think it might be?
Well, like many young people today, we knew he was involved with alcohol, although not perhaps as seriously as it might have become. We knew that he was smoking marijuana and that some of his friends were, but we never really thought it was going anything beyond that.
Sure.
And once we realized the extent of the problem, we realized the problem that we were facing, and clearly at that point we were really on different pages. We had to get on the same page, and
when you say you were on different pages, can you tell me what you mean by that?
Well, I was home with our son at the time, and I could see daily the behavior that was going on. You know, on the couch, argumentative behavior, avoiding responsibility. Ann was working at the time, and I would call her up, interrupt her work, get negative feedback from her, just look the other way, don't think about it. And so it was affecting our relationship as well. But as we moved further along in this whole thing, we got more edgy with one another, and finally realized through something that really had nothing to do with drugs or alcohol that our son just wasn't functioning.
Mm.
And Ann began to come on the same page with me. Not that I knew the extent of the problem, but I knew I was more accepting that there was something seriously going on.
Wow. So not just the dynamic of the family, but the marriage dynamic was getting pretty severely affected by this.
Clearly. They say that addiction is a family disease, and it was affecting all of us. Each of us was exhibiting our own behaviors in different ways. I was getting edgy, angry. I wasn't sleeping through the night. I was finding fault with my wife. I was finding fault with my son. I was finding fault with myself. Mm-hmm. I was believing, but I was doubting all at the same time. And it was really just tearing us apart, Josh. It was a very difficult experience to go through and a very difficult time in our home.
Anne, how about you, being mom?
Well, you know, my role was to be the caretaker, and that's what I was trying to do, was be the caretaker. And I was great at making excuses and rationalizing his behavior, saying, oh, it must have been like his, this or that, or he had a bad day, or, you know, whatever. And I was great at making excuses. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to put my blinders on to protect myself and to protect him, and just to be loving. But it wasn't working.
Diana Clark, family therapist and author of the new book, Addiction Recovery, A Family's Journey. Does any of this sound familiar to you?
Oh, it does. As you know, I do workshops for predominantly parents of struggling young adult addicts, and this is the story that I hear week in and week out. Parents come in, they're not generally on the same page. We have one who's living with complete preoccupation and intrusive thinking about the addicted loved one, and the other one who is thinking, how do I rescue them from this? So, I mean, that's very common.
Now, Jim and Ann, you took steps once you found out that there was a problem.
Yes, we did. I have to credit Ann with this. She searched and searched and made many phone calls, followed many leads, reached many dead ends, but luckily got to somebody who was very helpful to us, someone at Right Turn, I might add, who spent some time with us and listened to our story, provided some guidance, and also gave us some pushback on our thinking. Mm-hmm.
Yes, told me that I was not ready to move forward because I was still in a lot of denial. And the first thing that was suggested was that we go to Diana Clark's workshop. And education was the key factor. She led us through the workshop in terms of knowing the changes in the brain, becoming aware of those, making suggestions on what we could do. I still was wavering back and forth, really not sure. She suggested that we do some hair follicle testing. When I did that, we sent his hair to be analyzed, and I really could see in black and white what was going on, and I needed that. And so she was very helpful in getting us started with the education part of it.
So, Diana, you focus on this in your work. Why is treating the family system important to the recovery process?
Well, the best analogy I like to use is if you think of a family as a set of interconnected gears, like those refrigerator gears that little kids have. You move one gear and they all move. And an addictive family system is like that. But the addict or the person struggling with addictions, gear is paramount. And every time they wobble and every time they move, everybody else moves with them.
Mm.
And their lives become diminished along with them.
Jim and Ann are nodding in agreement with
Definitely.
You. And I think understanding Josh's dynamic of of just the disruption that active addiction can cause in a family system is and recognizing it, is beginning to understand just how much work there needs to be
done. It's amazing. It's like everyone is suffering from the addiction, but just the addict is the one who gets to medicate their feelings.
Right, yeah. Right. So when
That's
we come
exactly
back,
right. Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to speak. We're going to talk to Diana Clark a little more about just about the kind of work that she does and what families can do. And we're going to ask Jim and Ann a little more about how they've worked through this and the work they do on a regular basis. It takes maintenance, obviously, to just as recovery does. We have Gary on the line. Gary, welcome to Right Turn Radio. Do you have a comment or a question?
Welcome, Gary.
Yeah, I have a comment for you. I was compelled to call you because I've been dealing with two substance abuse people in my family for 30 years, from back when the days when Grover's was open in Beverly. And I agree with you. They don't really like it. They love it. They've been doing it for 30 years. They'll be doing it tonight. They'll be doing it tomorrow night. And I understand the anguish it puts on family members, but after going down the road with them back and forth for 30 years, you're not going to change them. They started out when they were in their mid-teens, and now they're in their late 40s, and they're going strong.
So you feel exhausted by the process, Gary, it sounds like.
Because I watched the whole scenario play out. When I watched them 10 years ago, both people, one's a brother and one's a cousin of mine. Brother is male, and the cousin is female. Do the stealing, the lying, the assaulting on their parents, disappearing for weeks at a time, for a few days at a time, then they come back and crash for a few days, not get out of bed, people take them to the hospital, seen the whole thing.
Gary, can I ask you, have you had an opportunity just over all these years to really reach out and get support from other parents or other family?
All of us have. We've gone down as far as pulling them out of bars, telling them not to hang around with the seedy people they do, and they like I said, they don't like it. They love it. You can find them any night. Bars used to stay open till 2. They stay open, a lot of them, to 1 now. You can find them down there, but heading down there around 10 o'clock because they don't have much money, but they stay till closing time. Then they go over somewhere's house for after-hours party, and who the hell knows what they do.
And that's a perfect example of, you know, the pain and chaos that is brought to a family system, Diana Clark. When somebody's at that place, what can a family do?
Well, I think that the family needs to start focusing on family getting healthy as opposed to focusing on the addicted loved one getting healthy, because I think that, if I'm hearing you correctly, that everybody is being affected by the chaos of these addicts. And this is a disorder that will take other people down with it unless the family does the work themselves to stay healthy.
I'd like you to read from your new book, if possible, Diana, Addiction Recovery, A Family's Journey. There's a great passage on page 42. Could you read that for us, just that paragraph?
Sure. Motivated by our desire to prevent permanent damage, we prop up our addicted loved one by taking care of his life and assuming responsibility for problems that rightly belong to him. We tell ourselves this is just a phase, or everyone drinks so much these days, or she is just overworked. In short, we engage in denial and adjust our expectations and standards to maintain the illusion that our loved one is okay and our family is safe. Driven by our fear, we become addicted to controlling our loved one. In short, we get sick along with the addicted loved one, and our life has diminished as a result.
Ann and Jim, this sounds exactly like what you were talking about at the beginning of the show. Protecting the addicted person and just seeing the family dissolve and really start to fall apart. Mm-hmm. Can you share more on that?
Yes, Josh, very true. For us, we saw the obvious signs and made excuses. We took upon ourselves to get our son out of jams that, had we let him continue, perhaps it might have been a helpful process. We went through cars. We went through police activity. Nothing major, thank God, for us. But it was still there, and it's still traumatic for a family that isn't used to that kind of behavior to be involved in it.
And we were doing the same thing over and over, and we were expecting different results. And that is the definition of insanity.
Insanity.
And it wasn't until we started doing things differently, setting boundaries, you know, not being in denial, not trying to fix and change our son, but we started going into recovery ourselves. We started taking care of ourselves, and we started getting educated, and we started, you know, talking more about it between each other. And when we started making the changes and we started setting the boundaries, that's when changes started taking place. And it really does have to be like a family effort. It has to be everyone is on the same page.
A united front.
Yes, absolutely.
Diana, you talk about, you know, protecting the addiction rather, you know, than protecting and denial. And we just heard the Jim and Ann, you know, talk about that, about, you know, making excuses, cushioning their fall. What is the role of pain and consequence in
this is my favorite subject on this whole front, because if doing heroin or doing cocaine is a little slice of heaven in that brain where the neurons are firing and the neurochemicals are elevating, the only reason to stop doing that is because the pain of the consequences outweighed the benefits. If the painful consequences don't outweigh, nobody stops. And I think every time we rescue our loved ones from painful, enlightening consequences, we may be, in fact, rescuing them from that moment of desperation that will help them get to recovery.
Diana, the caller who called in, he said that addicts love it. He used the word, the phrase that they love it. Is that your experience? Do addicted people love?
They may hate themselves and they may hate what they do, and I believe they do. Nobody, as Abby says, wakes up one morning and says, I want to be an addict. Hmm. But they do love the substance, and their brains love the substance. And their brains have become accustomed to having that substance flowing through them.
So clearly something has to be done. The family's suffering, the addict is suffering, and the addict is you know, exhibiting behaviors that are life-threatening. You talk about setting boundaries, and that seems to be a particular area where families struggle of there's just a lot of kind of years of bad boundary set or no boundary set, or things that send you know, differing messages to the person. How do you begin to set boundaries, to establish boundaries, and to enforce boundaries as a family?
I mean, one of the things I ask families to do is to actually take a piece of paper and draw a fat line down the middle of it and have on one side of it my recovery and on their side of it their addiction or their recovery. I hate saying this, but I have to. Every addict who is of adult years has the right to live their life as an addict. What they don't have the right is to have you pay for it, pretend it's not going on, to have you house it, to have you go rescue them out of bars, to have you bail them out of jail. That's all on your side of the boundary line. And so just piecing through what is yours to protect is paramount in the beginning process.
Anna, Jim, this is a really interesting point. I heard a lot of pain and a lot of frustration in the caller's voice. But your experience as being a family with a son in recovery, it sounds like it's been different. And what's your role been in that? I mean, how is it different? How does it change from, you know, 30 years of madness and mayhem to the life that you're living today?
Well, clearly, every family has each its own story. I hear Gary's pain, and I hear the length of time he's been going through it. For us, it was not that lengthy a process. We sought out professionals. We listened to what they had to say. We did things that were counterintuitive to us. Hmm. We really weren't prepared to set boundaries, but realized we had to.
Can you give us an example of like a boundary that you had to set?
We told our son that we would support his recovery, but that we would not support his lifestyle, that he had to make a choice to either leave our home or to go into recovery. If he chose to leave our home, then he would have to do so without the things that we had provided for him at home, computer, cars, etc. Luckily, and after a bit of soul searching on his part, luckily he did choose to go into recovery, he did choose to get help, and we supported him. It took time. He went to Florida for a period of time. He came back up. At one time, the folks in Florida wanted him to stay there, and it was a difficult choice for him whether to stay in Florida and make a new life or whether to come back here. We told him if he came back, he couldn't live with us, and that clearly he would need to seek out new friends. And he chose to come back. We sought out another program for him up here and told him we would support him going into that program for recovery, and we would support him in that program for as long as it took, but that we would not pay for an apartment, we would not pay for anything other than recovery. We needed him in a program. We needed him to get help. And luckily, he came in contact with a group of people of all age levels who had successfully recovered from drugs and alcohol. And he began to make good choices. It took time. This is a process that we would have liked to have seen end after a three-day detox or a one-month stint in a facility, but it took months.
Diana Clark, can I ask you, I'm hearing a lot of, you know, these boundaries that parents have to set. How do they learn to let go when they're hardwired not to, much like the addict mind is hardwired to continue to use for 30 years?
I mean, I think what Jim said is completely right. It is totally counterintuitive, and it can feel like tinfoil in your teeth on a filling to do what is probably right. I think for families, particularly parents, to realize that if everything is comfortable, then they are not actually doing the right thing. That living with the discomfort, as hard as it might be, is in fact loving at that moment.
Sure. And let me ask you, Diana, because we meet parents just day after day, and their 32-year-old son is still living with them. When does the responsibility to your child change from being supportive and loving to an adult?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that is an individual process. In part, that has to do with the particular fragility of that adult, young adult. But I believe that if we start sending the message that the way I can love you is to help you be functional, and the only way I will express my love is but with services that will help you be functional, I think it changes the dynamic.
Why don't parents set boundaries? It, you know, when Jim was talking about it just now, as a parent, I could hear the conflict and the pain in that, and also
fear.
I'm setting my child loose into the world where they could possibly die. Why is it so hard for families to set boundaries?
Well, I think there is that parental DNA. You know, we've wiped their bottoms. We have, you know, fed them with little spoons, and every bit of our instinct is to protect them from any kind of painful moment. And I think that's our generation in particular. I don't think my parents' generation lived in the same way. I think they recognized that perhaps painful experiences were growing experiences and didn't seek to prevent them nearly as much as we do. But I think that for us to recognize over and over again each time we're encountering something that feels wrong to us, that the only way they're going to walk through this addiction is through growth, and the only growth I know comes from pain.
Diana, do you ever tell parents to walk away? And if so, you know, when is too much? When did they begin to walk away from this problem?
I have never had to tell a parent to walk away 100%. I've talked to parents about the way they interact with their adult child, perhaps. I have one friend named Mary who has been just remarkable in this, and she had an intermittently addicted son. And she made it very clear that when he was clean and sober, all the privileges of their family were available to him. Family holidays, family dinners, family vacations, that kind of thing. But when he was actively using, those privileges closed. The boundary shut. And she would meet him for a meal. She would buy him lunch. But that would be the only kind of support she would offer him in addition to recovery-related support.
And, Jim, has it been this black and white for your family? Did you have to set some of these hard limits in order to really get your point across that you were not going to support this addiction?
Oh, absolutely. Our son fought us, you know, through the process, you know, tried to convince us that you know, he would be just fine if he was, if we paid for an apartment and, you know, let him kind of go his merry way, and fought us, you know, through the whole time that he was in recovery. And it wasn't until it was probably about maybe almost a year when his brain seemed to change and he was no longer under that drug-addicted brain, and he started realizing that he wanted the full recovery himself, and he started making better choices. And he had what was called a get-well job that, you know, even though he had always worked when he was addicted, he just never had money. And so having a get-well job, having to find an apartment himself, pay for the apartment, you know, he was starting to do the work that he needed to do. Previously, you know, we've talked with Right Turn personnel, and Woody, who was the main person we dealt with, he said, "You are definitely working harder than your son."
Wow.
And when we started turning it over to him and allowing him to do the work that he needed to do, that's when changes started taking place.
Diana, Anne just, you know, talked about the importance of the time that it took their son to really begin to make the correct or the, you know, the healthy decisions. Why is time important to treating people?
So if we think about somebody who's addicted to substances having developed a neural pathway of addiction, which is created by repeating action and repeating thinking over and over again, habit, so to speak, it takes a long time to grow a second neural pathway of recovery. The neuroscientists seem to indicate that it takes somewhere between a minimum of 4 months for that brain to even begin changing, and it takes somewhere near a year to 18 months for a new neural pathway to be firmly embedded.
And I love Jim and Ann. You know, we work in this field, and we work with parents all the time, and it can be frustrating when parents don't want to be involved in the recovery process or the treatment process, don't understand the importance of long-term work for the families. And Diana, don't you just love hearing Jim and Ann talk this way?
I've got a big smile over here. When every word they've been saying, I've been nodding like a bobblehead doll.
me too. Jim and Ann, I wanted to ask you, what have you learned in this journey of yours that you would pass on to somebody else, but that you wish you had known going into it?
Well, John, for me, I think the key is the isolation that one can feel going through this process or having a child who is having drug or alcohol problems. And for us, we've gotten involved with several different groups. We've attended meetings from Learn to Cope. We've been to several 12-step program family groups. We found them to be very beneficial. We also attend a family group meeting at Right Turn every other Monday night, where there are not only family members but practitioners to provide feedback and guidance. And it's just excellent to hear other people's stories, to realize that our story is somewhat generalizable, that they may have different little twists and turns, but they're pretty much the same, the fears and the anger and the anguish.
And can I ask you, how important has it been to you getting professional advice through this? I mean, this seems so counterintuitive.
Yes, we felt that we were very educated, and we could handle it ourselves, but we couldn't. You know, and I mean, I had very, very good friends that I could talk to, but and they tried to, you know, kind of guide me and say, you know, you've got to stop enabling, but it didn't mean anything to me at the time. I wasn't ready. And until I started becoming educated and getting professional help, the people at Right Turn were so helpful. The groups that Jim mentioned that we started going to and getting more educated, it was just so helpful. It just opened up my eyes. And it gave me the tools that, you know, was necessary to go on this recovery journey ourselves and to take care of ourselves. You know, the Diana Clark's workshop was just phenomenal. You know, the video that she had us, not the video, excuse me, the CD that she had us listen to, I must have listened to it 50 times before it started sinking in that, you know, what I had to do. So professional help is so important, so that it doesn't go on for years and years and years. It can stop, and it will stop if you get educated and listen to the professionals.
We love that, what you're saying. We have a call.
Oh, good.
Mary, welcome to Right Turn Radio. How are you today?
Welcome, Mary.
Oh, hi. I have a niece, 47 years old, living with her boyfriend. What had happened is she was drinking vodka plus drugs. She was getting drugs, pawning her jewelry and all. And so then she finally, you know, she started losing a lot of weight, crying out, you know, that she was going to die.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know. It's very, very sad. And so, you know, the family got together, you know, ourselves first, the parent, the stepfather, and the mother. But it's long distance, so they had to come here.
It sounds like a mess.
Yes, and so they did, we talked it over, and I said, well, maybe, you know, go to the courts, you know, to commit her, because she wasn't going herself, and she was stepping in front of cars and things like that. So,
Diana, you must hear calls like this all the time.
I do.
What sort of feedback do you give to somebody when they're really early on in this process?
When they're early on?
Sure.
I mean, we sort of go through what they're confronting, you know, that it is a brain disorder, that the behavior that they're seeing may well be consistent with that brain disorder and not necessarily consistent with that person they know underneath it, that they need to start assessing the ways they contribute to the disorder in terms of protecting the disorder from treatment, and then take whatever steps they can possibly take to stop doing that and perhaps raise the bottom to the person.
I just want to interject here that, well, and Diana knows this better than anybody, and Jim and Ann do too, it sounds so simple sometimes on paper, And then you throw in an entire lifetime of love or whatever, you know, the dynamic that's going on. And to carry these things out, whenever I'm talking to parents, I say, I know it's easy for me to say this, to implement it and to be somewhat consistent and to be have consistent boundaries and to keep the lines of communication open is incredibly difficult. It's counterintuitive, like we've said a few times. Diana, can you tell us where we could get your book?
Sure. It's available on Amazon, or you can come to any of my workshops, and it's available there as well.
Awesome. And what's your website?
FamilyHealingStrategies.com.
Great. That's FamilyHealingStrategies.com. The incomparable Diana Clark.
Thank you, Diana. Thanks so much for being on Right Turn Radio. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
I want to thank Jim and Ann. And do you guys have any wrap-up statements?
I would just like to say that, you know, our son has been in recovery and has, it's been his 2 years, 2 year mark, just a month ago.
Wow.
And he is just the person that he used to be. You know, he's just an incredible person. We love him. We are so proud of what he has worked so hard for. So there is hope, and that's what why we still keep going to parent meetings, because we want to convey that there is hope, and there is a way to solve this when you do involve the professionals who deal with this every single day.
That's so nice of you to pass on that message. Thanks for the work you guys are doing. Thanks for taking time and coming to Right Turn Radio and sharing your story. We'd love to have you back sometime to talk more about this subject, which is we could end up going on for hours about this.
It's days. Such a,
yes, it
days
definitely saved our family.
But it's,
definitely.
Yeah, and thank you, Jim and Ann. Josh, what a great show. I love having these... You know, Jim and Ann are the people who've experienced this, and then we have Diana Clark, who is the one who does the work out there and helps families.
It's like two sets of experts, you know?
I love
it. The family who's dealing with it and the professionals who are there to help the family, and it really speaks to the importance of community and support and just love that people share.
That's the whole thing. Community, getting help. You're not alone. Thank you for listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast. Please check us out on Facebook and at www.right-turn.org.